Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Illinois-based jazz guitarist and educator Mark Tonelli. We get into his new 2026 album, Brasiliana, and a very interesting path in the jazz world. This breakthrough release...
Mark, it's wonderful to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. So before we get into Brasiliana, I want to know, first and foremost, you know, this pandemic did... 6 years ago, it was just doing all kinds of things to all of us, changing the world, especially for musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it influenced the way that you create and do things today?
It's interesting because the pandemic was what really led me to pursue Brazilian music in a much more serious way and just Brazilian culture. I had started studying Portuguese about 6 months before the pandemic, and then during the pandemic, when I was stuck home, I'm a university music professor. All my classes went online. Some of them just got canceled because they weren't possible to meet like as an ensemble, you know. And so I had extra time. And I had summing up, I had extra time. So I started taking more serious Portuguese lessons with a guitarist friend of mine and who's from Brazil. And then I just really started getting into Portuguese culture. Portuguese, a Brazilian culture, and I applied for a Fulbright grant during that time, which I eventually received, which took me to Brazil to be a visiting professor of music there. So for me, the pandemic, although some gigs got canceled, then it was obviously, to understate the case, a real downer. It provided other outlets, and I tried to use those outlets in the most productive way possible. So that's really when I started to get more into Brazilian music and Brazilian culture.
So talk to me a little bit about this album. How did the idea come about? What was the overarching, kind of blueprint for making this? Talk to me a little bit about the guts of it.
Well, I had a small catalog of songs that I had written, 2018, 2019. And I thought, I'm going to make this recording of these new songs I've been working on. And then, the pandemic came and other things came up and I didn't make the recording. Instead, my interests, my focus sort of shifted to Brazilian music and Brazilian culture, Portuguese language, and then I eventually went to Brazil, and then I just kept going back. I went to Brazil, more than a dozen times in 3.5 years. And when I would go there, sometimes it would be just to visit, sometimes it would be to work and perform, teach. Sometimes it would be to do some recruiting for my university, but all told, with so many trips, I just became enamored, with the culture, the language, the music, and I wanted to express that in some way. So one of the last times I was in Brazil was to do a second Fulbright, and this one was to make this recording, Brasiliana. So that was my 13th visit to Brazil when I made that recording, and I had this grant, this Fulbright grant, to make the recording. And I wanted it to be mostly about my experiences in Brazil over those 3.5 years. And so the songs deal with different people, certain places, experiences that I had, places where I taught and, interacted with my students, my colleagues at the university where I taught there. I also wanted to do it with Brazilian musicians because I felt like I wanted to make this project as authentic as possible. I wanted it to be recorded in the place that inspired most of the songs, and I wanted it to be with the people that are part of that culture that inspired this recording. So all the other musicians on the recording are Brazilian musicians. I recorded it in Brazil, in São Paulo. And as I said, I had a small catalog of other songs that were hanging around that I thought were really, really strong material that I didn't want to neglect. So I included a few of those as well. So the album is mostly a collection and sort of scenes from my experiences, my lived experiences in Brazil, and also the sense of longing that I felt when I was back here in the US, because I'm always kind of planning ways to get back to Brazil. And then also these few songs that were, sort of sitting on the shelf, and that's what the album mostly is.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
Well, With my trips back and forth and lots of listening to Brazilian music over the years, really intensely over the last 5 or 6 years, I sort of kind of discerned what Brazilian music is to me, at least. And it sounds a lot like jazz, like American jazz, but then it has sort of its own thing. And there's sort of this unspeakable beauty that I don't know that I could really explain or that anybody could explain, but that sometimes is so achingly beautiful that I think, how can anybody write music this beautiful? And often it's very simple music. Other times it could be complex. Tom Jobim has some really complex songs. Toninho Horta is also a big influence on my writing. And he kind of straddles the line. He'll write some songs that are really harmonically, rhythmically complex, and then things that are just very simple, just simply beautiful. So my idea was to try to capture that feeling that if I could write something with just like, an iota, of the beauty that some of these Brazilian songs that I've heard over the years has in my music, and that people could feel that's what I would want them to feel.
So, what is it the first time that you got captivated by Brazil as a country and a culture, a music, just the whole feeling? What was the first pang that you got that made you get hooked on going there and loving that culture?
Probably started when I was a little kid. My mom was a jazz fan, and that's how I got into jazz. And she also had some Brazilian records. Anybody of her generation in the 60s would have known about the bossa nova craze. And so she had some records. She had an Antonio Carlos Jobim record with Nelson Riddle arrangements. And I remember just looking at that album as a kid and studying it and looking at the picture of him and wondering who he was. And the name Jobim sounded really, didn't sound like, an American name as a 7-year-old. I'm like, what is this name? So that probably started very young where the seed was planted. And then as I started studying music more seriously, I got into studying jazz. You study Brazilian music, it's part of the repertoire of jazz, And so I started getting into that and thinking, wow, man, these songs are beautiful. They sound like jazz, but they sort of have their own thing as well. And then I just continued studying over the years, and when I started studying the language about 7 years ago, very intensely, I thought, that's when I got hooked. I was on Duolingo one day. My daughter introduced me to Duolingo, and I thought, just sort of like without really even thinking about it, oh, I got to pick a language to use this app. Oh, I've always wanted to study Portuguese, and so really, without even thinking about it, without knowing that that next step was about to change my life in a really dramatic way, I just sort of like clicked on Portuguese, and then I was there for the next 3 hours just studying, just totally immersed. And I learned how to say the cat drinks milk, and I loved that I could say that. And I was like, I haven't missed a day of study in 7 years. And so, after a few months of studying the language. And when you study the language of another country, you start to get into the culture as well. It's almost inevitable. I thought, well, if I'm really going to get, fluent or come in contact with this culture, I need to go there. I need to go to Brazil. And that was where the idea came from to apply for a Fulbright grant, because some of my colleagues here at Millikan, where I teach, had done Fulbrights, and that was like, that's it. That's going to be my ticket to Brazil. And it worked out. It was delayed because of the pandemic and everything. But when I just to answer your question just a little bit with a little bit more detail, when I got there, finally, after like dreaming about Brazil for 30 years, seeing pictures of it and soccer games on TV and postcards of Rio and stuff like that, and just totally dreaming about a place I never thought I'd go to. We got to the airport, been traveling for 18 hours. I was exhausted, and I had to get in my rental car and drive to our apartment. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. I'd never driven in a foreign country before. I, didn't know what the road conditions or the drivers were going to be like. And as soon as we got out of the airport and into the city, I was hooked, to use your word. I was absolutely in love with everything I was seeing, and I just. That was that moment stands out to me, a singular moment where I remember thinking to myself, I already miss this place, and I just arrived, and I have another 5 months here. And that's exactly how I felt when I left, like, I'm not ready to leave. And so that's why I kept going back.
That's wonderful. So of all the instruments you could have picked, you picked the guitar. Why the guitar and why jazz?
Well, jazz was basically from my mom. She listened to jazz. She had jazz records. She listened to the jazz radio station WBGO, where I grew up. Close to Newark, New Jersey. She's from Newark. Guitar was from my grandma. My grandma played organ. She was the only one in our family that kind of really played an instrument and read music. And I remember watching her sit at the organ and play. And I was fascinated by the fact that she could read the notes and know how to interpret that and then transform that into something on a musical instrument. I was like, how do you do that? Now, I never asked her about it, but I think she saw me watching her and thought, I think Mark might be interested in a musical instrument. So she said to me, shortly before my 7th birthday, I'm going to get you a special present for your birthday. But she didn't tell me what it was. And then I was wondering, over the next several months, what is this present? Or I don't know how long it was. It felt like a long time. When it finally came, it was like this triangle-shaped box. And I was like, what is inside this thing? And it was a little half-size acoustic guitar that just sat around for a year, me making noise. And my mom said, why don't you take lessons? And I said, okay. So I took lessons, and then it was something that I excelled at, without even knowing that I was going to be, good at it, so to speak. And so that's the guitar was just it was a gift. Could have been any instrument, I guess. I played violin also concurrently. I took guitar and violin at the same time and played in the school orchestra and everything. But the scroll on the violin conveniently broke when I was a teenager. It wasn't cool to play violin as an 8th grader, so I didn't. So I was able to get out of that the orchestra and not have to play it anymore. I look back and regret that I didn't stick with it, but and a 13-year-old mind, guitar is a much cooler instrument.
For sure. So, do you remember the first live show, jazz or otherwise, that you saw that either blew you away or made you think, I want to be on that stage one day?
I never had a moment like that, where a lot of people say they saw the Beatles for the first time on TV or they saw Jimi Hendrix. It just was a matter of course. It just sort of fell into it. But I do remember some early shows that I was really fascinated with. I saw Max Roach when I was about 18. My parents took me to see him. I guess I was old enough to drive, but we all went together at the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey. Count Basie's from Red Bank, and we lived in New Jersey. We were from New Jersey. So we drove down there and saw Max Roach. Cecil Bridgewater was playing trumpet. Odine Pope was playing saxophone, right? I can't remember who the bass player was, but that was pretty cool. Max came out, he did his thing with his hi-hat. He would do that thing. And I didn't really even realize how significant of a moment that was, seeing Max Roach. Later on, when I went to jazz school and started studying, I was like, whoa, I got to see Max Roach. Holy cow. So that really stands out in my mind as a person that I got to see, very early on. That same theater, maybe even later that year, I saw Tal Farlow play. And Tal lived in New Jersey for years and had a weekly gig in a little Shore Point called Seagirt with bassist Gary Mazzarotti. And it was a tribute to Tal Farlow. And all these other guitarists got up on stage and played before him, including my teacher, who was Vic Juris. Larry Coryell did a set. Rod Beantrout played. Jack Wilkins, like all these amazing players. And then 3 hours later, Tal comes out and plays. And he said, I've been waiting backstage so long that my music's gone out of style. And it was a big laugh. And then, of course, he played. Getting to see those guys really young was, amazing.
Yeah, that's huge. So, was it always going to be music? Was that always the dream for you?
Nope. It was never the dream. I never dreamed about doing it. Again, I just sort of fell into it. I wanted to be a medical doctor for years. I am a doctor now. I have a, PhD in music, but I'm not a medical doctor. But and then I wanted to be an architect for a while. I really liked the symmetry of those types of things. And then none of those things kind of worked out for different reasons. And then when they all fell away, what was left was music. And I had been doing music since the time I was 8, studying, playing in bands, playing in orchestras. I'd already done some gigs, already had gotten paid to play. And so I was in a bunch of different bands, had written original music. It was my hobby. But then I was like, you know what? I think I can make this into a profession. And that was when I got the idea to do it. And then once that idea was in my head, there was no letting go of it. I was like, it was more like music sort of chose me than I chose it, even though it sort of, I think everything else fell away so that I could finally realize this is what I should be doing. And I haven't been able to see myself do anything since, although I took a year off once and worked at the Jaguar corporate headquarters, which was a great job actually. And I learned a lot about, dealing with people, sometimes irate people, and how to things about business and things like that that I still use in my career today. But that also taught me, no, I can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. The only thing I could really see myself doing is music. And so it was good to take that year off to, have that confirmation that I was, this is what I should be doing.
So, what gets you up every day and motivates you as a musician? What do you look forward to the most? What do you love the best about this life of being a professional musician?
So varied, like every day is different. I was just thinking about this very question recently, actually. It's funny you ask it. Like, the job at Jaguar was really cool. It was steady work, it was good pay, it had benefits, and I have all those things now as a college professor, right? So, I don't want to paint a rosier picture than it actually is. But I still have the independent musician career. And doing all that stuff and actually being an independent musician, being a performer, writing songs, doing concerts and traveling and playing with other people and playing around the world. That's part of my job as a professor too. It's part of what I'm evaluated on for promotion and tenure and all that stuff. But so I like the variety of doing all those different things. Just something about creating music, writing music, that's so I think one way that musicians find their voice, so I really love that part of it. And then just playing with other people. Like, I don't mind doing a solo guitar gig here and there, but I much prefer the interaction and the energy and the joy and the spirit of playing with other musicians. That's to me what it's all about. And that's what I think keeps us as jazz musicians going after the next gig. Like, when you have that sort of like high, that sort of you're in the flow experience, and you feel like everything is just clicking and everybody knows it as you're playing. You're just constantly chasing that, it's sort of an addictive quality, an addictive activity, I guess. And so that's what keeps me going, that I think, look on my schedule, oh, I get to play with this great band coming up. I do a monthly gig with a drummer here named Jay Ferguson, who's one of my favorite drummers of all time to play with. He's a lawyer also, but he has like a master's degree in jazz and he's an incredible drummer. You never think he was a lawyer because he's working all the time. Sort of like Brad Gregory. Brad's working all the time. I didn't know that Brad had a full-time job outside of playing music. And Glenn Wilson's on that gig. Glenn Wilson was on the road with, Buddy Rich, and he played with Bruce Hornsby. And then there's a great organ player named Kurt Reeder. So it's a really a cool group that we get to play with once a month. And I'm like, that's one of the highlights of my month is playing with those guys. Because they all play at such a high level. And then when we play together, I don't know, for me, it's like something magical happens. I haven't had that too many times with a set group in my career where I get to do that. And Jay's had that gig for 6 years, and I only inherited it because my good friend José Gobo, a Brazilian guitarist, went back to Brazil, so I got the gig. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like super excited to play with these guys. So yeah, that kind of stuff's what gets me up in the morning.
So let's dig a little bit deeper here. Everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Remember those memes? Like, here's what my family thinks I am. Here's
Yes.
what people. Yeah, that's what it makes me think of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I kind of vacillate between, imagining that I'm probably something much better or greater or cooler than I actually am, and then thinking, and then having days where I'm like really, get really down. Like a review came in for the album from a site in Europe. They really loved my playing, but he's. The reviewer said, I think it's a he, the reviewer, I'm not sure, but the person said, these Americans, I've rarely heard an American jazz record where they don't, get too sentimental or they, it's too kind, like when they're trying to interpret Brazilian music. And then I thought of a review that came in just a couple of weeks ago where the reviewer said the exact opposite, like Mark Tonelli has taken Brazilian music and made it into a personalized language. Exactly the opposite. I'm like, are these people listening to the same record?
Yeah, right.
So it's like, going back and forth between feeling really great about yourself and then having these moments of doubt, which I guess all musicians have. And so I don't, I guess I'm just trying to do the best I can with what I have to work with, each
Yeah.
day.
So if anybody wants to get a copy of the album, I know they can stream it, but if they want to download or get a copy or catch you live, any of the other good business, where do they go?
The, central place is marktonellimusic.com. And from there, you can hear the album on Spotify and all the other major platforms. It's also on Bandcamp for people that like supporting that type of platform. All my gigs and shows are all on there. You know, there's videos, a whole press kit about the album and just a press kit in general. So bio and all that stuff. So that's the main place. And of course, people can go directly to Spotify or Apple Music or wherever they want. But MarkTonelliMusic.com is MarkTonelli Central.
Okay, perfect, perfect. I will put that link in the show notes. Mark, this has been great. Thank you so much. It was great to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
No, thank you, Joe. I enjoyed it very much. Yeah, enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Brazil, Illinois, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Mark for swinging on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.